The first thing that I want you to understand about this book is that I think it's the kind of book that teaches you how to be a better human and how to create a true win-win. I'm Alicia Domenico, host of the Company Growth Podcast and CEO of Tangible Words. In this limited series, Books to Help You Grow, I'm sharing the books that have unlocked the most ideas for tangible words and our clients. While I recommend these books all the time, in each episode, I'll help you assess if the book will help you grow. There's a book I want to tell you about, which I long discredited by the title alone. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People, the only book you need to lead you to success. And it's by Dale Carnegie. And at the time of my purchasing my special anniversary edition of this book, it had already been 80 years in print. None of the ideas in this book are new, but it could just be the book that saves human civilization. Before I can kind of preface why I think that's the case, I have to reference another book by Noam Chomsky with interviews from David Barsamian called Notes on Resistance. Noam Chomsky talks about how we tend to surround ourselves with people of the same mind who reinforce our own beliefs. And he says that we all have good reason for doing that. We have a tendency towards doing that in real life. But social media magnifies this tendency, and this follow culture of reinforcing our beliefs and surrounding ourselves with the people that we know are of a like mind has also led to a great villainization of what the other person thinks, the person other than you. Villainization of the other is not a new concept. I think humanity has struggled with this for a long time, and certainly in the work of Frantz Fanon in philosophy, going back to my early days of studying, we learned about, you know, when you're the other, you don't really realize you're the bad guy. But other people out there think you're the bad guy. So when you're only thinking about yourself and the people who are like you, you don't have a check and balance to wonder who you're hurting in the process of pursuing your own beliefs. Chomsky actually criticizes the Democratic Party for making this change, I think in the mid-80s, where they stopped thinking about anybody other than the upper middle class, and that allowed the Republicans to sort of grab all the other classes and make them their own, which is why we see sort of this Trumpian element pursuing, where he hands out what Chomsky calls breadcrumbs to people under certain pretenses and stabs them in the back with other policies. I'm not a political expert by any mean. I'm only repeating the ideas of this book. But again, it brings me back to this idea of villainizing the other and why right now we really need to be thinking about how to win friends and influence people. Yeah, yeah. So now that I've given that long preamble, the first thing that I want you to understand about this book is that I think it's the kind of book that teaches you how to be a better human and how to create a true win-win where it's a win for both sides involved or all the sides involved. Most of the chapters give you a principle at the end of them, which is great for reference. And the first principle is don't criticize, condemn, or complain. I think that's something we've really lost the art of understanding because his book is really not actually about success in the sense of manipulation and trying to get what you want. But it's really about understanding where the other person is coming from and living your life with compassion. And I think that's the absence of culture that we're missing right now, is really trying to understand where the other person is coming from and having the acceptance that everybody is honestly trying to do their best. And that doesn't mean that we can't all improve or that we should accept the status quo. But I do think it means living your life with humility and compassion that the other people are trying to do the same thing. Jonathan Taplin, in his book, Move Fast and Break Things, isn't bemoaning, but he is commenting on the fact that without religion to hold us all accountable to what used to be a ruling religion in Christianity, at least in the Western world, we had a sense of morality that we were tied to. And the way that decisions were made was there was a great fear about in the face of God. And I think that held people a little bit accountable. But now we have the tech world ruling us, and there isn't any religion really that's ruling us anymore. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. However, there isn't that shared sense of morality, and rampant individualism has been allowed to reign in terms of how we make decisions and how we meet our common person on social media or in the world. That's why I think this book is still so important, is that that sense of compassion that everyone's trying to do their best is really absent. But when we keep that principle of not to condemn or criticize other people, maybe at least the condemnation part, I think we have a sense of don't give up. There has to be a way back. You know, when you think about something as simple as an apology, I always teach my kids that an apology has to mean something. You can't flip off or dismiss someone's apology, because that's our sense of how to find your way back in the relationship. Another thing that I'm trying to teach them is that conflict isn't necessarily bad. I was raised in an environment where conflict was totally feared and something to avoid, but I've learned that conflict can actually be incredibly empowering and restorative. And what matters most is how the other person responds. So imagine a world in politics or in business where you have conflict, but you communicate through it and you find a way to fix things together afterwards. Wouldn't that be better and more powerful to what you can actually achieve? Yet if you think about the way that you probably responded or criticized or thought about the last person who really frustrated you, I bet condemnation has been part of that process. Dismissing them as being worthy of change, dismissing them as having not tried their best. And you know what? For sure, there are times when we don't try our best and we absolutely need to be called out and find a way forwards. We were having this discussion amongst the Tangible Words team this week where we were thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we were looking at the stores that have a rainbow flag, have always meant something to me personally, as I've talked about on this show before. Yet sometimes their policies inside and the way that they treat staff are largely disconnected. And so it can kind of have this feeling of rainbow washing. And that's not what you want. What you really want is to be able to put your hand up and to say, hey, the policy inside the walls of this room are in conflict with the policies of what we're saying to the world. So can we try to do better? But it's that act of putting our hand up that we have come to fear in culture. And so there has been this kind of, if you can't put your hand up and there isn't going to be that safe space to criticize or to say we need to do better, and there is no language for how you can have a conversation about conflict, if that's missing, if we're not teaching that, then how do you do that without fear of being fired or some kind of repercussion? We have to be confident enough to put our hand up. And of course, when you're afraid of violence, that is really, really hard to do, almost impossible. That's why I think the allied community is so important, to speak up and say, that's how it should be, or let's try to do better, and I'm not the person you're going to beat up for putting my hand up. That's why I think those allies are so, so important, because they can be the voice. So I think that's how we got down the rabbit hole of culturally not knowing how to handle conflict and culturally only feeling like we can say it with a condemning tone behind closed doors. But what we need to find is our way back to being able to constructively have conversations about where we need to do better and to try to all focus on doing better. There's another book that's about emotional immaturity by Lindsay C. Gibson. And she talks about how we haven't really understood how to take criticism ourselves individually. And she says it sort of as a way of criticizing parents, but I would say it's not just some parents. I think we're in a culture of emotional immaturity where we don't really know how to talk about criticisms and how to give constructive advice to someone when you see them bumping their head on a wall, and how to be the person who can reflect and say, yeah, maybe I can do better. Instead, our ego rises up immediately and gets defensive. And that's also something that I think is contributing to our culture of not really understanding or being compassionate towards where the other person is coming from. So I return again to Carnegie's advice, not to condemn or to criticize. And I would say criticize maybe gets cashed in with understanding that you need to sometimes give criticisms, but let them be constructive and compassionate. Because if we condemn, then we don't have a way back. There's no way to apologize and move forwards. And we need that. Everyone needs that. Because we're all screwing up all the time. The second principle Carnegie discusses is to give honest and sincere appreciation. And I mean, we're missing that. How important and how empowering is that? Have you seen that be in the workplace? We know about it with kids, positive feedback and reinforcement. We know about it from Dr. Sue Johnson's work on Hold Me Tight and understanding love languages, that people respond well to praise. And I'm not talking about blow sunshine up your butt praise. I'm talking about honest and sincere appreciation, as Dale Carnegie writes it in How to Win Friends and Influence People. That honesty and sincerity and the gratitude towards work that has been done allows you to realign with that goal of the first principle of compassion and not condemning the other person, but acknowledging what they are doing right. We've lost that. Bring it back. And I think you'll find, as Carnegie writes, that it is incredibly powerful in handling people, but also in helping you work towards a common goal. And he uses terms like handling people and the only book you need to lead you to success and influence people and win friends. And all of that language, I think, is more marketing speak that sells books. But the heart of his writing and the way that he writes is not so manipulative as that. It really is about thinking about how to focus on someone's good points and help them see that what they are doing well, which kind of lends them towards being open to what you're doing well and what you both have in common instead of what divides us. You see this compassion and lack of manipulation with which Carnegie writes again when he talks later in the book about principle number 6, about making the other person feel important and to do it sincerely. Another one of his principles is to smile and to use people's first name and to be a good listener and to become genuinely interested in other people. These are all good things that I think everyone would agree to, absent of religion or any other kind of shared morality. I think around the world, those things matter in languages and different cultures. But he talks about it. Make the other person feel important and do it sincerely. He talks about this serenity as being foundational and being interested in other people. And I think that's that call to be less self-serving. Be less individualistic, be less focused on yourself. And certainly in the world of social media, we can see that that's actually not often done. So often we're criticizing others and thinking about ourselves and sharing, you know, surrounding ourselves with people who are like us and villainizing the other, villainizing people who are unlike us. That sincerity and acknowledgement of what another person is doing, that they are doing well and that they are doing their best, and compassion towards the fact that they might not be getting it right yet, and humility that you might not be getting it right yet in their eyes, allows us to find our way to each other. And that's why I think this book is so critical right now and probably going forwards, whether that's on an individual level of what you're trying to achieve in your life and cultivate for yourself and your world, or whether that is what you're trying to help others learn and understand about their world so they can join you on that mission. In the third part of the show, we talk about why this book wouldn't work for you and what would be a problem. Here's some of the thoughts that I had. The reason I discredited this book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, was for a long time, I didn't really think I cared about that. And the title alone, I really don't care about that. As you learn in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson, popularity as a value is the wrong value. Being popular for the sake of being popular does not and has never and never will appeal to me. And I think it's the wrong value for how to lead your life. However, when we look at the age of how important it is to stop villainizing and polarizing opinions, I think it's really important to think about how we can all work together to get towards a common goal and less arguing about the best way to get there and more just collaboration towards getting there. I referenced earlier the concept of not avoiding conflict and leaning into it so that you can resolve it faster, with this emotional maturity to listen to how you might be wrong and how the other person might also be right. Let's see how to Win Friends and Influence People stacks up with my understanding that you can apply the same principles now to be the change that you want to see in the world, to reference another famous quote. One of the principles that he talks about in the third section of the book, which is how to win people to your way of thinking. Again, it sounds manipulative, but it's really not. He says this principle that out of context might sound kind of weird. He says the only way to get the best of an argument is to avoid it. Well, how does that reconcile with what I'm saying about leaning in? And I think that's because later on in the same section, he quotes opera tenor Jan Peirce. My wife and I made a pact a long time ago, and we've kept it no matter how angry we've grown with each other. When one yells, the other should listen. Because when two people yell, there is no communication, just noise and bad vibrations. I love that. Everybody's yelling on social media and nobody's listening to anybody. We're all just surrounding ourselves with people who say yes to us instead of listening to the people who say no and why not. We need to understand those other perspectives. For years on Facebook, I kept a bunch of people who had very different political opinions to myself, not offensive ones, like not like the anti-gay people. I wouldn't keep them because I find that a personal attack. But people who had, I knew, let's say they voted blue when I tended to vote red. I kept them on my social feed because I actually wanted to learn what their issues were and I wanted to better understand them. That is the essence of collaborative discourse or productive discourse, and that is how society should run. I believe that in my core. But there came a point with not understanding how to communicate our perspectives that people would villainize and condemn in the way that they communicated. And I had to stop having those people, many of them, in my social media feeds because they couldn't communicate their other perspective without condemnation. And I think that's what we all need to collectively learn. How do we communicate? How to improve? How to help each other grow in a polite way that they can actually hear you instead of just creating this argument or the yelling concept where you are just noise and bad vibrations. So the idea of an argument is that when he says in principle one that the only way to get the best of an argument is to avoid it, Carnegie writes, I think that's because the essence of an argument is that no one's listening. And that's where we fall down. Going back to my personal implementation of how to win people to your way of thinking in the third part of the book, he says, show respect for the other person's opinions. Never say you're wrong. I love this. I always say, you're not wrong to people now because of this, because I think it's important to acknowledge that while I might not fully agree with you, you're also right. This is one of the things I learned in Beyond Success in Australia when I was new to the business world and I was learning from Paul Blackburn's conferences. One of his favorite things to add in an argument is, but can you see how I'm also right? And instead of saying that to the other person, or you can say it to the other person, think it yourself. And wonder how you're both right. Can you see how they're also right? Because it's very possible that you're both right in an argument, and hence that's why you're having the conflict. Do we remember that on a daily basis? Shouldn't we remember it a little bit more? Doesn't that sound like a good thing? We're both right, so we both know not necessarily how to get there, but we both have something to say. And instead of being frustrated that we're not being heard, we can collaborate and figure out how to get what we both want without all the screaming and bad vibrations. Without just making noise, but actually hearing each other sincerely, with honesty, with bravery, putting your hand up and being able to say, I think we can do better. But instead of condemning them and thinking about how you're wrong and I'm right, that dichotomy isn't real. There's a reason why they think you're the other. There's a reason why they're villainizing you. They think you're wrong. But we don't often stop to have the humility to consider that. And I'll leave you with this, because I think this principle 8 of bringing people around to your thinking ultimately comes back to you and what you're putting out in the world, which is the theme of how to win friends and influence people. It's not actually about what other people are doing, it's about what you're doing and what you're putting out into the world. So in principle 8, he writes, use encouragement, make the fault seem easy to correct. How amazing is that? If you don't make the fault seem easy to correct, there is no way back. The simple I'm sorry that we use in the English language can never be dismissed. Teach your kids not to brush it off. I'm sorry has to mean something. And this is about letting the ego turn off and acknowledging that we're all doing our best and we're not necessarily getting it right. Most of the time we won't be. So accept it and focus on how to make it right again. In Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the biggest things that really resonated with me as someone who went through that, through family members, of understanding their program a little bit better, was understanding that making amends is the most critical part of healing. And if we don't give that opportunity, and if we don't live our amends going forwards, what are we doing? What do we have? We don't have much. We don't have a way back, and we certainly don't have a way forwards through the conflict.
How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie is available from any major bookstore or online. Find more episodes of the Company Growth Podcast on YouTube or at anchor.fm/Company Growth Podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you've got a company growth story you'd like to share, reach out to Tangible Words. We'd love to hear your story and use it to inspire others to beat their own company growing pains. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Company Growth Podcast.